The new year is here, and it's the perfect time to kickstart your meditation practice. The Morning Meditation for Women podcast has short, daily guided meditations that will help you start your day with intention and focus, and make it so easy to get you into the habit. Imagine feeling so much more calm and confident in 2025. Follow and listen to Morning Meditation for Women on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time to take command with former NFL tight end Logan Paulson and former Commanders beat reporter Craig Hoffman.
Welcome in, take command. That's Grant Paulson. I am Craig Hoffman. Yes, that's a Grant Paulson, not a Logan Paulson, but Logan on his way back from Dallas after the Commanders pull out the 23-19 win over the Cowboys. And well, that was an interesting one, and now we also know that the Commanders are going to face the Tampa Bay Buccaneers down in Tampa wild card weekend. Who knows when that game is going to be? Grant and I were just yapping about before the show. Who knows? I mean, Grant, we could say our guesses, but by the time that a lot of people listen to this, it's going to be Monday morning. They're going to be staring out their windows at a foot of snow. So we don't need to wildly speculate, but it's definitely one of the juicier, kind of mid-tier matchups of wild card weekend. But man, is there a lot to talk about from this game, because Jaden Daniels gets pulled at halftime. Dan Quinn saying afterwards, leg soreness. And Grant, I really wish someone had asked in the post-game press conference, hey, if this wasn't week 18 and you hadn't already clinched a wild card spot, would you have made the same decision? Because if the answer is yes, I've got a little bit more concern about Jaden Daniels going into this wild card weekend than I otherwise do. But that's kind of where my head is coming out of this game. And now knowing the playoff matchup, where are you at as we close out the regular season?
I'm not concerned, because my assumption, and it's speculative, but I guess you would say, you know, just based on having watched Daniels like everybody else on the sideline the rest of the game, informed speculation, that he would have been fine. Like in a normal non-week 18 scenario, that he would not have been pulled from the game for that fatigue, we're going to call it, of his legs. The other thing I would point out is watching the game at home on the TV like everybody else, right away when they came out of halftime, Adam Amin showed Jaden, you know, they showed him on Fox on the sideline, and he said he didn't have his helmet on. Well, he shouldn't have had his helmet on. They weren't about to go out on the field on offense, and he was talking to his teammates, and he was kind of sitting on the bench, that he wouldn't have had his helmet on anyway. But just to pull back the curtain a little bit, as someone who's called some games and kind of done some TV, to me, right away, that sent a red flag up that, oh, they've already been told Jaden Daniels may not play in the second half, if they're kind of setting this storyline up. So I took that to mean Dan Quinn told them in some of the meetings that they had before the game that it wasn't a lock. Daniels played the whole game. I'm sure they were expecting some Marcus Mariota maybe at halftime. I'm a little surprised they pulled him, frankly, right at halftime when he played a poor first half and the team played a really poor first half just from a, you know, a passing game standpoint. But look, let's face it. The only chance they've got in the playoffs is going to be him carrying them to a win. They had to keep him healthy and escape without any kind of issue today. And as much as he was getting sacked early in the game, I'm sure that leaned on Dan Quinn's opinion too.
Yeah, for sure. That said, you know, the only way they can win is with five. Marcus Mariota's played three incredible halves this year. So, and in a way, I will say, how many times have we heard these guys say, as long as we got five, we got a chance. As long as we got five, we got a chance. There's a part of me that actually likes the fact that they pulled this off and had a miracle comeback without Jaden. It's like, no, guys, this is everybody. Like, if you guys can, you know, stop doing dumb stuff and block it up and play good coverage and, you know, do some things, get after the quarterback a little bit, like, you don't have to rely on five magic. And Quinn had a pretty funny quote after the game, too, of like, I'm really glad that we have shown that we can do this in these winning time moments, but just because we can doesn't mean we have to. And I'm trying to tell them that, like, we don't have to do it this way. It doesn't have to be this hard. To the Jaden point, though, I have a hard, like, I actually trust Dan on a lot of stuff. I think he's pretty honest with us in press conference settings. I think he's pretty honest in general. There are times he's got a company line. He's really, really good at sticking to it. He's a fantastic messenger. And he consistently has gone back to the line in this post game and with Christina Pink on the sideline, Fox is an Adams broadcast partner there on the sidelines, of like, this was a coach's decision about, hey, we needed a quarterback who could use their legs, and Jaden's legs weren't really working the way that we wanted him to. And so I caught on to the same thing of Adam coming out of half saying that, and I wonder if that was something pre pre, you know, weekend meetings, pre-game meetings, or is that something that Christina had already talked to Dan coming out of the locker room and they kind of set that up? But I also, you know, if we go by what he says, it was a more fluid decision. It wasn't a, hey, this was always the plan. And I don't know, without Biadasz, the O-line's giving up more pressure than we'd like. Let's get our guy out of there to be safe. Like this was Jaden can't do what he want him to do. And oddly enough, the thing that we want him to do is the thing that he's most vaunted for, which is running and being able to be a weapon with his legs.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. I mean, just from an observation standpoint, there was really no moment to me where he didn't look normal. Like it was so obvious for that stretch of games where he had the rib problem that he was reluctant to leave the pocket. He was not as sudden in his movement. Like he didn't have that same aggressiveness or like twitch that, you know, gotta go, that, you know, that sudden burst. I thought today he did. Like he had that 16-yard run up the middle when nothing was going right to get him a big first down and everything looked normal. So I just have to imagine, like, it's week 18. They'd already clinched. I understand that the seeding mattered, but it's not like they benched anybody else. You know, that's one thing that kind of goes maybe in your direction here. Terry McLaurin caught a game-winning touchdown on the final play of a game where you sat your quarterback at halftime. I was talking to someone I watched the game with in my house today, and we're like, how weird is it, though, that you sit Daniels at halftime and literally every other starter essentially keeps right. going? Even Frankie Louvu, by the way, who's maybe their most important player on defense, maybe their best player on defense, gets hurt, leaves with a shoulder injury, and comes back in the game.
Yeah, your starting left tackle, Brandon Coleman, goes out, right. comes back in when you're yeah. already down a Cornelius Lucas.
Yeah, so and they're not, so they were not in like let's pack it up mode, but I just think there were different rules with Daniels. That is my own assessment from the outside looking in, because there was no tell. Also, I go back to, you know, we all saw this, but like, and what a kid he is. I just love the person, like the way he was cheering on Marcus at the end of the game, and the exuberance and the excitement and how much fun he was having watching Marcus Mariota have his big clutch moment at the end of the game, right? But like, he's literally jumping around. I mean, you saw that like I did. He did not look in any way like a guy who was physically bothered by anything. So I take all of those as positives. The fact that they won, by the way, in this game, to your point, without him is a big deal. The Carolina three quarters that Mariota played were phenomenal. People forget they scored 40 points in that game. Yeah. The half of football he played today, coming out, going 15 of 18, would have been 16 of 18, had a bad drop deep down the field. Bates got separated from the ball, but on maybe his best throw, his best extended play, would have been like 215 yards and a couple of touchdowns. It was a gem. I mean, just a masterpiece of a game. And they couldn't run the ball again. They haven't been able to run the ball other than the Titans game for the most part, for the better part of a month and a half, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But their leading rusher was a quarterback, Mariota. Their second leading rusher was the other quarterback, Daniels. And then yeah. you get to like Eckler and Robinson, who combined for 22 yards on 8 carries.
Yeah, the running game issue is enormous, and we've talked about it a lot, obviously, on the show with Logan when he's on here, and we get into the nitty gritty of the schematics and all that, and we'll look at the tape and do that on Tuesday as usual. And sometimes it's like, hey, they struggled for a little bit, but they figured it out in the second half. Like last week, Robinson actually had a decent day by the end of it. It's just there's not a lot of total volume statistical accumulation because he sucked for the first half. But second half, like pretty good. And overall, he wound up averaging like 4.6 a carry. The quarterback run game has been electric. And man, I love that Marcus just like old man strengthening on the touchdown. Was the touchdown the one that he had down by the goal line? Yeah, he got in on that one, right? Yeah, he's just like, I'm going to shake off a defensive end because I have gray hairs and old man strength. Let's go. But they have to find a way to get that going. And, you know, if it's not going to be B-Rob, like Chris Rodriguez has run pretty well. Like, let's get him in there. And I think it's kind of wacky that he can't get more looks, but they are there every day. I can't say the coaching staff is really smart and I trust them and then be like, these dummies don't know what they're doing when they've got more information for me and generally make good decisions. So I'm going to assume there's a good reason. I don't currently know what it is. Terry has not looked himself the last couple of weeks since he popped up on the injury report with that ankle. Now he's faced two good corners in AJ Terrell and Deron Bland, but you know, that was off today. And I think that's the thing going back to the first half and Jaden is Jaden looked off today. Like there's just a little bit of lackluster sharpness. And he's allowed to have games like that. He's A, he's a human being. B, he's a rookie. So the fact that he's a little bit off as a thrower today, I'm like, oh, I guess I'm just hoping that, like, hey, we look back and there's like, glad he got that out of his system and he comes back next week and is darting and dotting people. But it just felt again like the offense was really stagnant for a half. Marcus comes in, it rolls in the second. And I think the question that we can't have an answer to is, would Jaden have done the same exact thing in the second half? Did they make adjustments or did Marcus just come out and execute it better / everyone else execute it better? We'll have a better idea when we watch the tape back, Grant, but I think that is one of the key questions, I think, going into next week.
Yeah, and look, everyone tries to make so much out of like any point that's ever made about Jaden Daniels, right? His season speaks for itself. He's going to win the Rookie of the Year. He's in the MVP conversation in some capacity, like tangentially on the outside looking in. I mean, so there's from the 10,000 foot view, what just happened over this year was unbelievable. But this game was not good from a throwing standpoint. And you just wanted, at least for me, you wanted to see the offense go in with momentum. Now, maybe they will anyway, because of the second half. And because, frankly, it doesn't matter to them when they get back to the building and to the practice field. They're feeling good right now because they won a football game. They moved with ease the entire second half. They went and got touchdowns every time they touched the ball. But you wanted Daniels just to get his work, break a sweat, feel really good. If you could have gone down the field and scored a couple touchdowns and pulled him, it's like the end of the preseason or something, it would have been ideal. But yeah, what was curious to me is for a guy whose ball placement's been splendid all year and whose accuracy has kind of been the story when he throws the football, you're right. I mean, he was just off throwing it by a step on most throws. They didn't really push the ball down the field at all. So his statistical line where he went, you know, 6 of 12, just top of my head, they had two wide receiver tunnel screens to Diami. Yep. They had a little hitch.
I got his throw chart. I mean, he's got, let's see, he's got one that he threw 30 plus yards down the field. Everything else, there's one that was a 25 yard incompletion down the right sideline. Everything else is 20 and under, including three behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think of the longest air, like ball that he completed in the air.
I mean, it was about 8 yards.
Yeah. So they couldn't get anything going vertically in any way that was on target. And what was weirder to me, I don't know what you thought, like him and Terry weren't right.
Right.
Which that connection has been so good. But the last couple of weeks, was it the Falcons game, I think, too?
Yeah. Falcons game. And it popped up with that ankle injury. And it's like, what's going on here? And, you know, I think Terry is a guy that is not, he's not Jamar Chase. He's not Justin Jefferson. And is like a super precise route runner. And so you lose 10% on Terry McLaurin. He becomes a much more regular receiver. Now, does he rise to the moment and wind up catching the game winning touchdown and pulling off the mask and doing the whole scary Terry bit? Hell yeah, he does. Cause he's competitive as hell. And that's why I love that dude. But down in, down out, it's just not quite the same. And you know, that was the thing with Jaden too. It's just not quite the same. And I think part of it too is feeling pressure. Like, this O-line without Biotish, very, very different. And they commit a ton more penalties. Dieter got absolutely smoked by Micah. And look, a lot of people have been smoked by Micah Parsons, but like, yikes, bro. So there's a lot of stuff that I think goes into that. Plus, like, it's got to be hard. Just like, football's a hard game to get up emotionally for and to know, like, hey, we're kind of locked in. Like, we've already done the hardest lift. Like, to go emotionally today had to be harder too. And that's much more subconscious than conscious. And I know there's probably, you know, people watching, listening. It's like, oh, but it's Dallas week. And it's like, these dudes are paid professionals. It's a little different.
They don't care about that. I think, you know, a lot of guys had some, you know, individual stuff that mattered financially. And they do. I do believe like being the sixth seed was something that was drilled into them enough that it mattered. I want to come back to the line in a second. But you mentioned McLaurin and the walk-off win. What a cool moment for him.
Yeah.
And for people that didn't connect the dots, that's his 13th touchdown. So he sets the franchise record, which has been really, really important down the stretch, not only to him, presumably, but, you know, to Cliff trying to get it for him and to his teammates. You saw the way everyone reacted. So for him to finish after one catch for 4 yards, I think it was in the first half, 8 for 62 and a touchdown and come up with the big, I mean, that's Terry McLaurin at his absolute best. It's a contested catch vulture. It's a dude hanging from him. It's a pretty low percentage throw, frankly, on that fade, the way it was being covered. And everything's got to be perfect, and it was. But I wanted to ask you, Cliff, I know they had just won, so this is maybe going to sound like a dumb question. They had just won the game. on the fade to Terry, but he seemed like more pumped up than even in a, like, they've been winning games that way all season, and they flash over to Cliff and he's high fiving someone. He was like going nuts on the sideline. And I wondered if, do you think it was something where they like saw something and drew something up right before, or like, did you see his reaction? That was the most fired up I've seen all year.
I did. I mean, he was definitely fired up after a couple of other ones as well, but I definitely felt like the most. And I think what my guess, like knowing the, I don't have a personal relationship with Cliff at all. I don't think he has a personal relationship with many people in the media. Certainly not me.
Who is, and I don't know who else.
Yeah, hasn't really been out there at all since training camp, because our radio shows are on when they do media stuff, so it makes it hard to be in two places at once. And he's not doing interviews and all that kind of stuff. But like, I think Cliff's pretty honest at the podium and kind of get a sense based off Hard Knocks and the other things that we've seen about him with the vibes of that dude. Like, he loves football. And he loves to compete. And one of the things that we've talked about a lot on this show is I love how competitive he is, where if like the offense is stagnant, he will go to a reverse pass Deami Brown, which I don't know how Olamide Zaccheaus dropped that ball. Like, that was right in the breadbasket. And he just like, he dropped his breadbasket. All he had to do was hold his basket out. And instead he like flipped it over upside down and then hit him in the face. I don't, it was bad. But like he does stuff like that.
Stumbling right before that. I think it threw off the whole timing, but even still, hit him in the hand. I mean, that play is so hard. Like, you got to call it at the right time. You got to get the right look. You got to get everyone.
They nailed it.
Yeah, everybody does the thing. Deami is left-handed. I think it's the second time we've seen him throw it, but I always forget that he's left-handed. He hasn't thrown any this year. But, like, he rolls back into the – everything's perfect. The throw is perfect. Dime. And the easiest part is the receiver who catches footballs all the time just catching a football.
And it's a professional NFL receiver who's had a hell of a year, who looks like he's never caught a deep ball in his life. And that's – sometimes that's the NFL, because these dudes are human. But with Cliff – you know, that's an example of his competitiveness, right? He just refuses to lose. And with 6 seconds left, the high wire act that you have to walk there to make, like, we can't take a sack. We can't delay. There's no check down. Like, we have to hit this exactly right. And that's really hard as a play caller. I saw a joking post earlier today about, like, I'm 100% sure about Liam Cohen now, because that dude was able to get Mike Evans a catch for the amount that he needed when everybody in the building knew that was the only reason they were running a play. Like, if you can figure out how to do that when everybody knows, like, how does Dallas not know it's Terry? Just put four guys on Terry. Like, what are you doing if you're the Cowboys there, right? But to get it formation, to get it, you know, aligned, to have everybody perfectly doing their job, to have gotten to that point in the first place where, I mean, there's how often are you saying to the TV, Grant, like, they got to go, they got to hurry up. Yeah. They just don't panic in those situations. Like, they have a way to find themselves in the situation they need to be in to ultimately win the game. And that's exactly what they did. They do it. I think they're all super happy for Marcus, because that dude has been so good for them this year. And I think not only, like, he's getting the credit because people are starting to ask about it. 48 wrote a great story on him, et cetera. But there's kind of still this bigger narrative about him that he quit on the Falcons with everything that happened down there, you know, on the quarterback show. And for him to have that moment, I think was probably a huge part of it for Cliff as well. Like, all of that just comes together. And, you know, it's the Cowboys. Like, that Cliff's a Texas guy. Like, that probably means something. Yeah. Who knows who's in the stands? Like, there's just a lot of stuff. And I love it. Winning should matter. And I think in the first half, it felt so like, oh, we just can't lose. And in the second half, they're like, F it, let's go win. And they did.
Yeah, they've been pulling it off all year long at the end of these games. You look at the clutch gene, or the really the ability to just have a slow heartbeat. And as you said, like, they've operated well without clock a lot of the time. Like, they burn bad timeouts every single week and don't have them and still find a way to make it work. Like, did it again this week, by the way, with about 13 minutes left. They're burning one on defense. Now, that they might say was to strategize on a big third down, but even still, like, you're down a point, the other team's about to go up at least four. That's just not a good time to use a second half timeout.
Although they did get the stop, didn't they?
What's that?
They did get the stop, didn't they, on that drive?
Because
if you do, like, if you can save 4 points, that's pretty good use of a timeout, even if it makes your life more difficult later.
Yeah.
Because it was in the red zone.
I guess that's true. No, they didn't actually, because Dowdell, I think, punched it in. They got a stop, but there was a penalty or something. And then remember, they scored with 4 minutes and 16 seconds left to take.
Right. I just couldn't remember if it was that drive or the drive before. Anyway, continue.
Right. But beyond the point, to go back to Cliff really quickly, I think you're right. I think my hypothesis was essentially, like, if you're around Terry McLaurin, you love that guy. And you want good things. So I think some of it is like Terry got his record. Like, hey, we're going to – maybe it's the Liam Cohen moment, honestly, where you're like, all right, we're going to win or lose, but we're going to win or lose with Terry breaking the record right now. Here's the call. And you tell everyone, here's the jump ball, Terry, it's you. And like, if you have that kind of Varsity Blues moment, maybe that leads to his reaction. I also think Marcus is a part of this. And like, here's my real deep down, deep cut. I don't think this was like a conscious thing in the moment, but Cliff Kingsbury to me has not gotten enough credit all year long for what he's done because of the Jaden party. And the Jaden party is a party we should all be having. Okay. We should all get tickets and we should all have it because the guy's unbelievable. But people have a really hard time sometimes doing two things at once. Like we cannot say both simultaneously for some reason. I don't know why we can't do this, but like that Jaden Daniels is unbelievable. And also Cliff Kingsbury has made his life a lot easier and has been a godsend for him too. Like he makes Cliff right all the time. And I think we see that, but there's plenty of times where freaking Alamide Zaccheaus and Jamison Crowder are running free. And like, that's a scheming winning coordinator. So I think for him to like have that end of game moment where it's Marcus Mariota running the show, like, again, like he did against Carolina where they hung 40, and you're doing it with Mariota and Zaccheaus on that last drive and Michael Dieter and, you know, me at tackle. Like, I think if you're Cliff, maybe it means it wasn't just Jaden against Atlanta going, hey, I'm dragging all your asses with me and we're going to that paint. Like, this is whatever the opposite of that is.
Right. No, 100%. And they have consistently found ways all year to high weaknesses to accentuate strengths. I mean, there's no doubt that Jaden has a huge role. And Robert Mays has mentioned this stat on the Athletic Football Show, which as regular listeners of Take Command, no Grant, means it inevitably will wind up here. But like Jaden is fourth, or coming into the weekend was fourth in total EPA in the entire league. And about a third of his EPA was on scrambles. So like that is two thirds Cliff Kingsbury and Jaden Daniels working together to make an incredible amount of magic. And one third Jaden Daniels taking the rest of it that's not working and making chicken salad out of we all know. And like both of those things have happened, that Jaden's ability to make the chicken salad sometimes though is in a decent situation because of the play before. Like they're prepared for certain things. He's well coached on when to scramble and when not. Like all of these things, even on the stuff that Jaden makes happen, like he's been coached up really, really well. Okay, that's a lot about the offense. Let's try to, in 5 minutes here, talk a little bit about the defense and then initial thoughts on Tampa. So the defense today, red zone, good / thanks Cowboys for being terrible. It's
the red zone.
The red zone is an area that offensively requires a high level of precision, and minus CeeDee Lamb and Trey Lance at quarterback, who like good for Trey Lance, had a pretty like impressive day. Trey Lance certainly got himself a roster spot in the NFL next year, if not, you know, a place where like sneaky he competes with some older veteran because it's a crappy QB class, whatever. We'll see. But point is, like, it requires a high level of precision, and that is not the current version of the Dallas Cowboys. That absolutely contributed to multiple stops, field goals forced, and of course, when Trey just flat out misses a dude that's wide open on a fourth down when he scrambles away from a Derek Forrest blitz. Run game, yikes. Again, just like gash after gash after gash after gash. They make enough plays. I'm not going to do the whole BSJ thing, but like that PI call is effing ridiculous. That is such a terrible call. And like, it angers me because I'm like, at some point you just have to go like, what's the guy supposed to do? He's out there trying his best, and his reputation is he picks up flags, and half the flags he gets at this point are because of his reputation. So that sucks. Please, Marshawn Lattimore, come back. Also, that means you get to fight against Mike Evans, possibly literally. We'll talk about that in a second. But when you talk about the defense today, Grant, like what comes to mind for you?
Well, a couple of things. It's hard, I think, with Trey Lance because when they did rush pretty well, he handled it with his mobility and athleticism in a way where I thought he made it difficult for them to actually get home. But I did not think consistently they rushed the quarterback nearly well enough. And a lot of times what happened was because of that, either they lost coverage, or I think what people are going to see when they go back and rewatch this game, because it was noticeable to me in real time, he did a pretty good job occasionally of leaving the pocket and resetting and keeping his eyes downfield, which is a nice trait, honestly, and made a couple plays like in plaster scrambling that way. So I thought that was you know, pretty good by him. That's like good football for the offense.
For sure.
He gets paid too, kind of thing. But just painting with a broad brush, they saved their bacon by going 5 for 6, getting red zone stops, and 3 for 4, getting goal to go stops. That's the story of the game. That's how you win. They were not nearly good enough. And if you play this game against Baker Mayfield in Tampa next week, you lose handily, in my opinion. Yes. There were just too many open receivers. There was not enough disruption in the backfield. And they don't stop the run still well enough. And, like, I know Dallas has run it way better in the second half than the first half. So just the narrative that the Cowboys don't run the ball well is, like, no longer accurate. But right. That said, I'm sorry, respectfully, like, Deuce Vaughn can't be gashing you for 6 yards a pop. Like, that's not a thing that should be happening. Rico Dowdle, they ended up having good numbers against, 22 for 72, but it was louder than that in the early part of the game. They ended up doing a little better job against him as time went on. I actually thought they played some of the gimmicky stuff, like the end arounds and the jet stuff, pretty well.
Yeah.
It seemed like specifically Dorrance Armstrong, maybe because he saw so much of that last year, I don't know, like did a pretty good job on some of those plays. But just generally, wasn't enough impact for me. I thought Jeremy Chinn was awesome again for the most part and needs to be re-signed. I thought Mikey Sand was still at corner. You're going to have a couple plays you want back. But I thought he was very physical and willing as he normally is. And
he had a good Sander still game as opposed to he's had a couple bad ones in a row. Like
right.
he's a rookie who's going to lose some. But, oh, my God, when he hits you, you feel
he's
it.
Physical.
Yeah.
I want willing DBs, man. He is one. And he's like Sharpie – building block, you know, you just write that in pen now and yep. you feel good about it. So there were some encouraging enough things, but to same thing as I said about the offense, honestly, Craig, for the last game before you're going into the playoffs against this team, this to me was a chance where you have your, you know, it's Trey Lance, respectfully, like go get your 5 sacks, like right. everybody eats kind of day, turn him over a couple of times, pick off a couple passes, get a couple hands in passing lanes. Like none of those things happened. And it just came too easily for Dallas to move the ball the way that they did for upwards of almost 400 yards. You know, it just wasn't good enough.
Yeah. I mean, this is a bend but don't break defense. And this is kind of who they are. They will allow you to move the ball on some level between the 20s. They're not going to give up big plays over the top. And they can buck up in the red zone. And they did that today at a level that I don't think you can do, certainly against a Buccaneers offense where, dude, if you want to talk about like throwing with precision and conviction, I don't know that there's anybody that will have more conviction than Baker Mayfield in the red zone. So like that dude, whew, you can't give away some of the stuff that you gave away today. You also have to finish sacks in a way that you didn't today, which Baker can be a little slippery, but he's not as slippery as Trey Lance. So that's nice. But part of being a bend but don't break is we trust that you're going to run enough plays that you're going to do dumb stuff. And the Cowboys did. They committed penalties, whatever. And part of the dumb stuff has to be turnovers. Eventually, you have to know that you're going to run so many plays that you're going to throw one to us and we're going to catch it and we're going to take advantage. And that's how Quinn's defenses were top five every single year in Dallas. By the way, congrats to DQ. Now 4 years in a row, the team that he has either coordinated or head coach has won 12 games, which is pretty impressive. But that has to happen. And they keep dropping interceptions. Balls get batted up in the air and they don't come down with them. And part of that's a talent thing. Part of that is a luck, like a pure luck thing. Part of that is probably some other factor that I'm not thinking of. But if they can get two of those next week, like they're going to be great. And if not, they're going to give up 30 plus points. And it's kind of sucks that there isn't a lot of in between. But that kind of is where I am. Obviously, with Tampa, you have super talented receiver in Mike Evans. McMillan has had a hell of a year as a rookie. Baker's playing his face off. Bucky Irving is, I mean, he'd be up there in rookie of the year voting if it wasn't for like Jaden and the other ridiculous stuff that's happening with Brock Bowers and some of the other rookies. But like Irving's having an incredible year.
He had a 1,000-yard season in the back.
Yeah. So he's great. Obviously, I mean, look, the highlight is we get Evans versus Lattimore if Lattimore can play. Yeah. And they were better when Lattimore was out there. It's just a very limited amount of time. If not, I think it's going to be really tough to stop them. We'll see what, you know, if how a much, much, much more advanced Jaden Daniels goes against this Todd Bowles defense, where that was a hellacious defense to play in your first NFL start. But this is definitely, I would say, a winnable game for the Commanders that until I know the injury statuses of a bunch of their players, I would probably my initial lean here, Grant, this is not what people want to hear on the Take Command show, a Commanders podcast, but if they're going to get Antoine Winfield back in their secondary, And especially if they get Winfield and Jamel Dean back, and Washington is down Lattimore and down a couple of these guys on offense, I think it's the books are going to favor Tampa. I'll put it that way.
Well, no doubt. I mean, I think if they don't get those guys back, the books will favor Tampa. I'm not sure that they'll have Jordan Whitehead, who was placed on that NFI list, right? So that means he's almost certainly.
Yeah, a car accident, which is pretty scary.
Pretty, and they were wearing kind of T-shirts and celebrating just like his presence on the team before the game. So it sounds like maybe a moderately serious car accident injury. He started every game for them and is an important member of that secondary. So they're certainly not going to be fully healthy on the back end. Couple things. Everyone is assumed that I think they'll beat Tampa because I've said all week I'd rather them play Tampa, and that is not a thing. Like, Tampa will be favored. The Bucs will likely beat them. I just think they'll have – if you tell me I've got to beat one of them, I'd rather play Tampa Bay. As well as Baker Mayfield's playing, he's on a heater, and he played his butt off down the stretch. He leads the league in turnover-worthy plays. Had a couple more today where he's giving you a chance to stay in the game. You know, he's going to let you get your hands on the ball a couple of times. 25 of them this season to lead the NFL. Also, there's not an edge rusher for Tampa that is particularly scary with their tackle issues right now for Washington. You know, that
but is a banged up Biotish against and the way the level that Nick Allegretti just plays in general versus Vita Vea. Whew.
So, but that is kind of where I'm going. But I'd rather Jaden Daniels be able to see it coming in a sense, right? Like in some ways, I can also move the pocket a ton for that interior pressure. But yeah, Vita Vea, and it's not just him. It's Kalijah Kansi, who is a star in the making. Like that's a Robin to a Batman who is probably could be his own Batman in another building. So yeah, they're really good in the middle, but they don't have Jared Verse, who would have been playing against one of the tackles to wreck the game for the Rams. I just like to travel a lot more, staying on the East Coast, staying in the time zone. I love the familiarity of playing in a building you already played in once, where you open your season, even though you lost there. Like it just
probably makes taste in your mouth about it too.
Yeah, it just makes you feel a little more normal. So for all those reasons, it is a winnable football game. I mean, the Bucs look, Baker Mayfield has had a good season, but turns the football over with as many of the good plays he makes. And they've got one great receiver instead of two great receivers. With a secondary issue, I'd rather go up against the one great receiver. And as you said, if you get Lattimore back, give me my popcorn. Like, that is awesome, must-see stuff. The X factor becomes McMillan on the outside opposite Sanra Still and whoever else. They task him.
Show Mikey a bunch of game tape from a national championship game last year. Be like, hey, remember what you did to Washington? Remember that he was there? Yeah. Let's do that again.
Yeah, let's run it back.
I mean, my biggest concern going into next week is the run game. Can they offensively 100%. Get the run game going? And then defensively, can they stop it? Because, you know, we can talk about all these guys in Evans and Lattimore and let's get your popcorn ready. The fight might happen when Evans is blocking Lattimore for Bucky Irving. And that's definitely something we gotta contend with if you're Washington next week as well. So it's a full offense to prepare for. I like this staff a lot. I think they'll put together a good game plan. And by the way, I also think that they'll have adjustments ready. You know, we saw the Daron Payne on the edge early. I think you also saw some of the issues with playing a defensive tackle on the edge, that you lose some mobility there. So it's going to be an interesting matchup for sure. Grant, anything else we want to add before we get out of here?
Well, I was just going to say the Bucs are the number three running team in the league all year long. Yeah. So the Washington's inability to stop the run gives me anxiety to be sure going into this matchup. And the Bucs are pretty good at defending the run as well, just outside of the top 10 going into today. So it's not like, you know, they're weak where you'd want them to be. But look, it's the playoffs. And this is kind of, you know, Washington is for the amazing accomplishment of 12 wins, and it's a great accomplishment. But now we're talking about the big leagues and leveling up and playing varsity stuff. Like, you're going to play a team that's really good on the road.
Right.
It's going to be hard to beat that team. And for a team that has two wins at the time of the win against over 500 teams, maybe for the year, I guess, the way the Falcons ended, you know, one win against the team that's over 500 when it was all said and done, you're not going to be a favorite. But that's okay. You don't need to be. You got five, and he gives you a shot. And I think they're going to score. They're going to move the ball, and they're going to score. So get a takeaway or two, and you can go in and stun somebody.
No doubt about it. It'd be fun to go back and look back through some of the notes from the first Tampa game and see where some of the opportunities are. Obviously, Cliff will be doing that, as will the whole offensive staff, and a much, much different Jaden Daniels than we saw week one. We'll be ready to go. Hopefully his legs feel nice and fresh after the second half out today. We'll get updates on that more tomorrow. You guys carry Quinn live, right? During on Mondays.
Yeah, we'll have him on our show in the 3 o'clock hour.
Yeah. So 3 o'clock hour over on 106.7 The Fan during Grant and Danny. Chris Russell will whatever Chris Russell does, crowing. That's what I was like, what does a rooster do? He crows. Stop crowing for Dan Quinn's press conference on our station over on the Team 980 side of it as well. Of course, Grant's with Danny from 2 to 6:30. I am actually 4 to 6:30 tomorrow because we have the FCS championship game tomorrow night on the Team 980. So just 2.5 hours of the Hoffman Show. We'll squeeze 3 hours of content in it. I'll do my best, I promise. So I'll see you guys then. Logan and I will be back here on Take Command on Tuesday for a film review of the Cowboys game, and maybe a first look at Tampa, and then a in-depth preview of Tampa, preview of Tampa coming up on Thursday. Grant, appreciate you playing Swap of Paulson today. Much appreciated on that. And Logan and I'll see you on Tuesday on Take Command. Thanks for watching and listening, everybody.